to Atheists Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate you tuning in this morning. Today is Sunday, August 28th, 2016. I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan, and my guests today are Callie Wright and Ari Stillman. During this live show, we welcome your phone calls to 952-946-6205 and your emails to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. The secular movement is no stranger to conflict. It never has been in all its long history. It does, however, have a tendency to treat each new round of conflict as a fresh problem with no precedent and the potential to rip apart a fairly healthy growing movement. Recently, such a conflict swept up Callie Wright and Ari Stillman of the Gay Theist Manifesto podcast, and they had some solid thoughts on managing conflicts like these. Today, we have them joining us to talk about it all, the good, the bad, and the ultimately irrelevant. And this is going to be part one of a two-part show sharing different approaches on this topic. Part two will be next Sunday with a different guest, and we'll let you know who that is at the end of the hour. Good morning, Ari and Callie, and welcome to Atheists Talk.
Hey, thanks so much for having us.
Hello.
Now, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Gay Theist Manifesto, tell us what that is and how it came into being.
Sure. So the Gay Theist Manifesto is a podcast where we discuss the intersection of atheist and secular activism and LGBTQ activism. The idea being that in the LGBT movement, there's a lot of religiosity, a lot of proselytizing, and, you know, even though about half of the LGBTQ community identifies as non-religious, so a lot of LGBTQ non-believers don't necessarily feel that there's a place for us in the wider movement. You know, there's lots of preaching and stuff at LGBT events, and I'd be here for an hour if I told you the whole story, but basically I ran into a lot of that, and I'd kind of had enough, and I was already sort of, you know, getting into LGBTQ activism in my local community, and I had a couple of experiences that convinced me that I couldn't just do that. It had to be atheist and secular activism as well. And so, you know, long story short, you know, conversation's a thing that I enjoy. I feel like I'm all right at communication. So I said, hey, let's do a podcast. And then, you know, I did it for a while with some other folks. And then I met Ari and asked Ari to be a co-host of the show. And the rest is history.
And Ari, how did you end up wanting to do a show like this?
Well, I actually started listening to the show. As Kelly said, she started out with some other co-hosts, and I heard about the show on other atheist podcasts like Dogma Debate and a few others, and I was really interested because being a queer and trans person myself and an atheist, I was really excited to be able to hear content that would merge those two parts of my identity, so I started out as a listener. And I just started talking to Callie on social media and became a patron of the show. And because patrons get a monthly hangout with Callie and other listeners, I was able to get to know her better that way. And we just, you know, kept on talking. And eventually, I guess she decided that I was smart and funny or something strange like that and had good things to say. So she asked me to become part of the show.
Yeah, I had a secret job interview. I actually decided that I wanted to do a topic for an episode that I knew that they would be a good guest for, and they were being interviewed for the position and didn't even know it. And after the show was over with, I was like, hey, by the way.
Nice. We do, in fact, trick people to end up working on this show as well. So that is
sometimes you have to.
You do, because people are not very good at thinking they can do something like this. But so the Gay Theist Manifesto is kind of unusual for a movement podcast in that it really works to create a supportive community for its listeners. Was that a conscious choice on your part, Callie, or did it just kind of happen that way?
I think it was a conscious choice because what the balance that I try to strike is I don't want it to just appeal to other LGBTQ folks in the movement. I want it to appeal to allies as well. And I get emails from people all the time saying, you know, oh gosh, I love your podcast. I know it's not really for me because I'm not gay or I'm not trans. And I'm like, no. that's not what that's about. So I really try and create a balance between it being a safe and supportive place for LGBTQ folks to go to where, you know, they know, like, I'm going to listen to the show and I'm not going to hear somebody arguing against my right to move through society equally. And I'm not going to hear somebody spouting hate. towards me. But I also want to make sure that when allies listen to the show, that they get an idea of what the situation is like. So we do talk about that stuff a lot, but it's never in the context of I'm going to give somebody like – the head of the American Family Association a platform by inviting them on the show to debate them or something along those lines. So it is a very conscious thing. I really want to create a place where LGBTQ non-believers feel like they kind of have a home and they have friends there that, you know, understand their experiences and know what they're going through and want to love them through whatever they're going through. But I also want it to be a place where allies can come and learn and get better and, you know, better understand the situations that we face. So, very, very much a conscious decision.
And now you talk about the fact that you're not going to miss out on those kind of topics. So, for example, you won't necessarily have somebody from the American Family Association on, but if you listen to your show, you're still going to know what those folks are saying, right?
For the most part, yeah.
Not necessarily in every gory detail, but you're going to have a sense of
what we used to do is we used to do the thing that a lot of other shows do and like, hey, conservative politician X said this silly thing, so let's make fun of him for 5 or 10 minutes. And I don't want to denigrate that. There are people who do it and they do it well. They do it far better than me or my other co-hosts ever did.
I take offense to that. I'm a professional maker funner of peopler.
I'm talking about previous co-hosts, honey. I wanted to do something a little different, you know, because the thing is, you know, when we make fun of things like that, when we laugh at things like that, we take their power away, right? So I don't want to dismiss the value of that, but I'm not sure that that's something that I necessarily want to focus a lot on the show, because what I want people to understand is how serious these things are too. You know, so that's, you know, when we talk about the bathroom issue, you know, we're very sensitive to like, you know, we don't want to beat people over the head with how bad this stuff is, but people also have to understand. So, it's a balancing act for sure.
And when you have that kind of conversation, you know, it feels good and it feels like you're venting, but it's not really very productive for the most part. You're not actually reaching out to that person and having a conversation and trying to, you know, educate them more, or trying to change their mind or trying to reach some kind of a middle ground or understanding. So that kind of conversation is not necessarily the most productive. And I feel like we try to have more productive conversations and try and actually solve issues, not single-handedly, of course, we're not superheroes. We can't solve these problems ourselves, but we feel like through talking about them and having, you know, open dialogue about them, it's a better recipe for moving forward than just, you know, dwelling on things that people have said that have been hurtful or harmful in the past.
Well, and obviously the reason that I ask is because one of the big criticisms that we run into in the movement is that if you are having a space that is let's go ahead and call it safe, even though that's always a relative term.
Trigger.
Right.
For a group of people, that those people are somehow not exposed to people who disagree with them. And what I hear you telling me is that's very much not the case. It's just that you're trying to be thoughtful in how those messages from other people come across.
Well, first of all, I think that entire idea is silly in the first place because, you know, speaking specifically for our wheelhouse as, you know, being queer and trans individuals, you can't exist in the world without being exposed to the opposition. You just can't. So the idea that we would try and create a place that's going to, if we're going to discuss those topics, we're maybe going to hit you over the head a little bit more softly with it than other people. You know, it's usually an argument that's made by people who don't have to worry about those things. I mean, I am beat over the head with the opposition to my existence basically every time I walk out the door. You know what I mean? So to say that, you know, I'm trying to create a space where we're not exposing people to these ideas and that they're somehow sheltered, it's asinine. That annoys me so much.
Anything you want to add on that, Ari?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of listeners that we have who our show and maybe a few other places online are the only places where they feel like they can be themselves because they don't live in a situation where they can be open about who they are. You know, I hear from a lot of people who are closeted because they're worried about their jobs or they live with family and they're worried about losing their homes. And, you know, they feel like our show is a place where they can come and feel like they're home and feel like they can breathe easy for just a little while. So if we were the kind of show that had those, you know, vicious debates and had toxic voices on air, then those people wouldn't necessarily feel like it was a place where they could come and be home for a little bit when they can't be home in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, the best example of this that I can think of is last Thanksgiving, we did a show where it was actually on Thanksgiving night, and the idea was to do a two-hour live show where it was just us hanging out as family. And, you know, it wasn't so much like we weren't having, you know, conversations about heavy issues or anything like that. Like, had a couple of guests, and, you know, we were just talking and hanging out. We had people call in live, and, you know, we had a little live chat room going and everything like that. And someone actually said, like, this is the first time in years I felt like I had family to be with on Thanksgiving. And that, to me, is far more valuable than the idea that, you know, I've taken someone, a vulnerable person in a vulnerable position, and, you know, beat them over the head with, hey, maybe you may be wrong about this.
All right, and I do need to go to commercial, so everybody please stay with us through the break, and we'll return to Atheists Talk with our guests Callie Wright and Ari Stillman. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is Atheist Talk, and I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan. This is a live show, and we welcome questions at 952-946-6205 or emailed to radio at minnesotaatheists.org. Atheists Talk is an unusual show. Very few places in the U.S. can someone randomly turn on commercial radio and hear a bunch of atheists talking about topics that interest them. Increasing our visibility this way does have costs, however, and we need your help. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to our radio fund, please visit minnesotaatheists.org. Today's guests are Callie Wright and Ari Stillman. Welcome back, Ari and Callie.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
So before we went to the break, we were talking a bit about the idea that safe spaces keep you from running into ideas that you may disagree with. And I think we did a pretty good job, although I'm sure we'll keep coming back to it because it seems to be something that folks just can't get into their heads. But I'd like to talk a little bit.
Yeah, we might fully unpack it after about 3 or 4 days.
Right. But I'd like to talk a little bit specifically about the secular movement. Now, how long would you, each of you, consider yourselves to have been active members of the movement?
The podcast was pretty much my entry into the whole thing. Maybe a little bit before that. I used to do audio production for Dogma Debate for a few months before the podcast. So it's really been a year and a half, a little over a year and a half.
Yeah, I was listening to a ton of podcasts for several years, but I didn't actually get into myself until I became part of the show. So that would have been probably 9 or 10.
And if you didn't have something like this show that was specifically not just aimed at you, but something you could make that helped people like you, something that drew on your experiences and talent, do you think you would have gotten involved in the movement at all?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I mean, probably, because, you know, what really sparked it for me, and I have to give David Smalley a lot of credit for this, he does the 24-hour fundraiser on Dogma Debate every year. And the first one that he did was for Foundation Beyond Belief. And part of what spurred me into doing this in the first place was the fact that, you know, if you look at all of – I had a list of all of the guests because I was capturing the audio for this entire show. And I looked at all the guests, and for the most part, they were all people that I had a lot of love and respect for. And, you know, they're all 100% on board with LGBT equality and all that kind of stuff. But – none of them were LGBT themselves that we know of anyways. And for none of them was their – that was their main thing. That was the conversation they were trying to push. And so I kind of saw a niche there that needed to be filled. So, you know, if I didn't do the podcast, I mean, probably – I would probably be a person like, hey, I'm a transgender atheist and this is a conversation I want to have. Like, you know, I probably would have done other things in the movement. I don't know if I would be quite as active if I wasn't spending the majority of my life outside my day job doing this.
And Ari?
No, I'm not really sure. I don't really see myself as much of an activist as Callie. I'm a lot of an introverted person, and Callie's definitely an extrovert and a go-getter kind of person who seeks out those kinds of things. So I would probably be more involved as I was before, as a consumer of podcasts and, you know, YouTube channels and websites. So I was definitely involved in kind of the consumer area, but I was definitely not a content creator, and I kind of stumbled into this whole thing almost a little bit on accident. So thanks, Callie.
I detect not just dinner. Exactly. Okay.
I'm sorry, and you're welcome at the same time.
So, even in Callie's response there, I am hearing if it weren't for the fact that I am who I am and we need people like me as part of the movement, might not have gotten involved.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's kind of surprising to me all the time that people value what I have to say, because I don't know. I feel like I'm saying the same things that a lot of other people are already saying, but I've come to realize that the more voices, the better, you know, especially in this kind of a situation when we're talking about the queer and trans community, because it's a community that their voices are so underrepresented. So, you know, people are always reaching out to me saying that they appreciate the things that I say, and I'm just really grateful that I'm able to do something like that for those people who need to hear that kind of thing.
Well, and I think that's a common thing in activism. You know, if you look at the people who do this work, most of them are not professional activists. And if you look at what they do in their professional lives, it usually doesn't really have a lot to do with activism. You know, there are people who are passionate about something. They see a need. They see that there's not someone else filling that need. So they're like, well, I guess I'm going to go ahead and jump in and do this. So, you know, you have people who are running organizations that, you know, they've never run a nonprofit before, but this work is important. It's something that I believe in. So, like, I'm just going to jump in and do it. And I think you see that a lot. And it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because, if we had a group of professionals that could make a living, you know, doing this stuff, like, maybe we would be a little further along. But at the same time, we have people who have real passion, who really want to see this change happen, and that's the reason that they're doing it. So it's, you know, it's a good and bad thing.
And I'm going to put on my mom hat here, which I don't get to do very often because no kids, for Ari, and just and people who might be thinking the same thing, and say, you know, even if somebody is saying the exact same thing that you're saying it in a different way, and that's going to reach somebody who the other people just aren't. So keep talking.
Yeah, I've come to the same conclusion myself, just being baffled by people saying that they appreciate what I'm saying. I'm like, well, but I'm not saying anything that people aren't already saying. And it didn't really matter if I was or not. It was just that I happened to be the voice that they were listening to at the time, and that was something that they needed to hear or something that they learned something from. So either way, it was helpful.
All right. So I don't want to go into too much detail about the current conflict that prompted all the recent round of discussion. It's, I think, probably pretty boring for anybody who wasn't completely involved in it. But I do want to make a couple of points about it, or maybe let you make them for me, because that's what I do as a radio host. And the first is that you guys didn't start this by being who you are or talking about the things that you talk about for the movement. True?
Not completely true. Okay. Well, I should say it wasn't spurred on by something that's a conversation that's normally part of my wheelhouse. What actually spurred it, I mean, there was supposedly a history of things that I had supposedly done, but what actually triggered it was me arguing with someone over racism, which is something that I'm passionate about and something that matters to me, but it's, you know, as a white person, that's not an issue that is, you know, an issue of, you know, me arguing for my own rights or anything like that. But yeah.
Yeah. And we do need to go to commercial. But when we come back, I want to talk just really briefly about the nature of the conflict. Because while it wasn't sparked by the things that you folks do, it really kind of took that shape. And I want to discuss that briefly. So please stay with us through the break, and we'll return to Atheists Talk with our guests, Callie Wright and Ari Stillman. This is Stephanie Zvan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm your host, Stephanie Zvan. Atheists Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, Farmers Insurance Agent Georgia Hancock Tsui, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@minnesotaatheists.org. The music for our show is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. And if you have a question or comment on today's show, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Callie Wright and Ari Stillman of the Gaytheist Manifesto are with us today to talk about navigating conflict within the movement. Now, before we went to commercial break, we were talking in kind of general terms about the current conflict that prompted all of this discussion about how we should handle these things. I was making the point that while it didn't start with talking about LGBT issues, it went there very quickly.
did it ever? I think in the short podcast episode, I referred to it as taking a gun to a water balloon fight. So the basic question, you know, without getting into specifics, the basic question is when we're pushing back against a perceived attack, where's the line? Are racism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, fat shaming, are those things ever okay because someone, you know, attacked you, hurt you, did something to you that you didn't like? And my answer is a very strong, unequivocal no. Someone could kill my mother, and it still wouldn't make it okay for me to start making fun of that person for being fat or for being a sexual assault victim or, you know, putting, if they happen to be a person of color, you know, making racist comments or, you know, posting, you know, symbols of racism, you know, in response. Those things are just never okay. You know, and that doesn't mean that you can't attack someone's character. I mean, sure, you know, call them names, call them terrible, you know, say they're being a jerk, you know, that's all fine. But when you go after that intrinsic piece of who someone is as a human being, you can't do that without by proxy attacking everyone else who shares that same characteristic. If it is shameful to be a woman with a penis, you can't just apply that to someone you don't like. If you apply that to someone, you're applying it to everyone for whom that's their situation. And so those things are just never okay in my mind. And some people think they are. And that's kind of the nature of the conflict, if we wanted to boil it down to what it really comes down to.
And when we do these things within the movement, Or I should say when these things happen, because that's not really something I'm going to identify with doing. There seems to be a message that everybody needs to not exactly shut up and get along, but that's part of it. And this is part of the reason that I asked you earlier about whether you would be an activist within the movement if you hadn't found a way to make your identity count for who you are as an activist. When you run into things like this, and I'm pretty sure, although I haven't seen it personally, that it's not the first time it's happened, just one of the more high-profile ones.
It is most certainly not the first time.
What does that do to your willingness to be an activist?
Well,
defiance
aside. I almost kind of go through the stages of grief, almost. You know, I began by feeling really defiant and like, you know, F you, I'm gonna push back and I'm gonna overcome, blah, blah, blah. And then I get really tired of it and I'm like, oh my God, what am I even doing? Like, why am I doing this? You know what I mean? Like, this is not worth it, you know, so on and so forth. And then I'm ready to give up. And then I get defiant again. And then I'm just like, can we just forget this ever happened and just go back to our lives, please? but, you know, in the middle there is that, you know, you mentioned there's this compulsion. It's this may seem like a dismissive way to put it, and it really is more nuanced than this, but the best way that I can put it is that I think some people just plain have a fetish for discourse at all costs. And it's an impulse that I understand, because, you know, someone doing this who is someone that I don't know, that person is probably just cut off. If my best friend does it, given their history, given their allyship, given their friendship and support of me, they might deserve at least a chance to redeem themselves, right? That doesn't excuse what they did or make it okay. But maybe they get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt, more of a chance to explain themselves, apologize, and make it right. But I think what it ends up looking like from the outside is people just assume that anytime there's a conflict, that there's an equivalence on either side of the conflict, and that, you know, either side's unwillingness to, you know, to do the discourse at all costs, to have a friendly conversation and talk it out, you know, amounts to, you know, being closed-minded and, you know, and not being willing to have a conversation. And I really, really bristle at that, because if David Fitzgerald and I, for those who don't know, he's a mythicist. He's a person in the movement who pushes for the idea that Jesus never existed. If I'm a person who thinks Jesus existed and he and I start trading personal insults and jabs over that idea, then yes, we are probably both being silly. We probably both need a proverbial slap in the face and to be told to chill out and stop acting like children, right? Because that's an academic idea. It's not that big of a deal. And to get personal and start insulting each other, that would be silly. But if we're talking about an attack on the core of who someone is as a human being, I mean, it's like seeing an open wound and jabbing a serrated knife into it and twisting it as hard as you possibly can when you know exactly what you're doing. And someone else saying, like, well, let's give them a fair chance to explain why they stuck a knife into your stomach. You know what I mean? Like, it really is that ridiculous to me.
And Ari, you wrote a piece for the Gaytheist Manifesto also has a blog on the Paytheos Network. You wrote a piece for that questioning the idea that arguments like this are going to ruin the atheist movement. You want to talk about that idea a little bit?
Right. So this was a response to several people who commented on the recent drama, writing articles about, you know, who's to blame. David Smalley wrote one called What's Killing the Atheist Movement, where pretty much he talked about, you know, how personal disputes shouldn't be getting involved in the movement, and that these kind of things are what's, you know, causing the atheist movement to have so many issues. And my response to that is, personal disputes are going to happen in any kind of social group. You know, it's not anything that's unique to the atheist movement. And yes, the atheist movement and community does have issues with, you know, racism and transphobia. And, you know, there are a few alt-righters who are involved who are, you know, very, very hostile towards members of minorities who want to bring more humanist conversations into the atheist movement. And my opinion on this whole matter is that it's an issue, it's a problem, it's something that we need to have a conversation about, but just having disagreements on these sort of things is not going to cause the atheist movement to fall apart. You know, the atheist movement is a really diverse area of people. You know, we all agree on this one thing, that we don't believe in any religion or in any God. And that's, you know, the only thing that we agree on. So I don't think that it's reasonable to expect everyone to agree all the time. And any time that there's any kind of disagreement, it's a sign that the community is falling apart.
Even if it gets all loud and shouty.
Well, and similar to that, I also think that if people have certain irreconcilable differences and they decide, like, okay, I'm not going to engage with this person anymore, I don't know that that's such an incredible failure. You know, and I hate to keep picking on David. I want to make it clear that I love David. He's a good friend. There's some things that he said about this that I disagree with, but none of them have challenged my right to feel the way that I feel or excuse what happened. So, like, it's fine. You know, that we...
Well, and also, we don't have David on the show in large part because he has his own very large show with a very large following. He can speak for himself. It's not that we're trying to shut him out, but he gets heard, so...
Right. And so... You know, my pushback is that, you know, because one of his arguments is like, you know, why are we making such a big deal over these few things that we disagree with when there's so much more that we agree over? And I don't want to completely dismiss that idea, but there's more nuance to it. You know, if we agree theologically on literally everything, if my atheism and your atheism look exactly the same, cool, awesome. But if we then have a disagreement on my right to equal access to society, almost nothing else that we agree on really matters that much. You know, if you're not on board with my right to free and equal access to society, to being able to live in the society that I live in as an equal part, it really doesn't matter what else we agree on, because that's so much bigger of an issue to me. And I think what it comes down to a lot of times is the question of, is atheism enough, right? You know, we agree on atheism. Is that enough to make us allies in activism or in a movement or even on a personal level? And I gotta say, I mean, I think there's a lot of evidence that the answer to that question is no. You know, I mean, someone like The Amazing Atheist, if you look at his videos about religion, they're fantastic. But the minute he starts talking about social issues, I want to crawl into a hole and die. You know what I mean? So I think it's a little unfair to expect, because we all think that religion is not only, you know, factually incorrect, but a force for bad in society, and that we would all be better off in a purely secular society. That basic, you know, baseline of thought, I don't know that that's enough to expect us all to forget any other difference we have and work together on everything.
All right. And that seems like a pretty good place to leave it, which is good, because we are out of time for this show. We will be returning to this topic next week, though, when our guest will be PZ Myers, who's also had some things to say in discussion with David Smalley. But so thank you both, Ari and Callie. They are with the Gaytheist Manifesto. You can listen to that podcast. Highly recommend it. And I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in to Atheists Talk. This is Stephanie Zavan, your host. I'm proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists, and I hope that you appreciate the show. The show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and our donors. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at minnesotaatheists.org. This is Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The podcast for this show will be on our radio page later today. Have a nice Sunday, everybody.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, August 28th, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and I'm joined by Dave Silverman, President of American Atheists. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Nick. Great to be back.
Always good to talk to you, and thanks everyone for joining us today. We got a lot of news this week, a couple of really important things that we need to talk about. I think the first one is the news that we've filed a lawsuit along with our good friends at the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and a number of people and organizations based in Pennsylvania, challenging the unconstitutional invocation policy that the state House of Representatives has. They have said that they will not allow non-believers, so people without a God belief, to give invocations, and they say, and we disagree, that they're protected under the Supreme Court case Greece versus Galloway, which is not the case. So we've filed a lawsuit. We've got five individuals and three organizations from Pennsylvania, along with us and Americans United, challenging this thing. So why are we doing this, Dave? What's the point?
Well, I mean, it's shocking to me. It's not shocking. It's not surprising at all. But I mean, it's surprising to say that this is happening in the shadow of Greece versus Galloway. But in the shadow of Greece versus Galloway, there have been lots of other secular invocations around the country because of this Greece versus Galloway decision. And when we look at this case, we have to realize that this is a case about privilege. This is a case about allowing religious people to do something that non-religious people can't. And we bang the drum of equality. We say we want equality, we want equality, and yes, everything we say is justifiable, everything we say is defensible, but they still fight it. Why do they still fight it? Because it's not about the prayer, it's about the exclusivity. It's about us and not them. It's about in groups and out groups. And when we talk about Christians succumbing to equality, we're talking about them losing this privileged status that they did not deserve, do not deserve. And I believe they know they don't deserve. That's why they fight against us with these lame arguments like, oh, Greece versus Galloway allows us to discriminate against atheists. Well, like you said, no, it doesn't. But they come out with these bogus assertions, and we see this over and over again, because they don't want to deal with the fact that they're losing their privilege. They don't want to be only equal to everyone else. That is something that's real, that they're losing, and they don't like it. That's what makes them angry. But at the same time, too bad. You don't deserve the advantage. You don't deserve the privilege, and atheists are here to claim their equality.
Yeah, and you know, on the face of it, it's just ridiculous, because in Greece versus Galloway, they say that you can have the prayers, you can have the invocations, as long as they maintain a non-discriminatory policy in choosing, you know, who's going to deliver it, and that they don't, I think the quote is, doesn't reflect an aversion or bias against minority faiths. Well, you know, yes, being an atheist is not a faith, but you know, there are, you don't have to have a belief in God to be part of religion, and the idea of humanism or the expression of our religious beliefs or lack thereof is protected under the Constitution, just like their Christian beliefs. And you know, you hit it right on the head when you said that, you know, this isn't about they don't care so much about the prayer. What they care about is preserving the status quo that gives them special treatment. So
And the status quo that gives them the right to be bigoted against us, that gives them the political correct position of being bigoted and anti-atheist. That's what they're trying to protect, because they're used to it, because it's comfortable for them, but it's not moral.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I think is something we need to talk about is the story that kind of blew up in the last few days, where a guy out in Oklahoma, Matt Wilburn, tried to give $100 to a charity that was going around fundraising at his workplace, and he wrote on there in the section that asked, you know, do you want to make this an honor of anyone, that it was from his group, the Muskogee Atheist Community, I think is what the group's name is. And the charity returned it and said, sorry, we are we get our funding from the Baptist Church. We're founded on religious principles, so we can't honor atheists when they give us money. And, you know, this is yet another instance of a group kind of cutting off its nose to spite its face, because they said we couldn't honor atheists, and then they claimed that the atheists were, you know, demanding special treatment, or that we were that Matt was trying to give the money in a way with strings attached, and it said and when in fact he just filled out the form they gave him, tried to give him $100. Well, when they rejected his money, he turned around and said, okay, well, let's raise some money and see if they'll, see what they will accept, see if they will take our money. He ended up with almost $30,000 in 2 days. And the church, well, not the church, the Murrow Indian Children's Home, that is funded by the Baptist Church says, nope, still not going to take your money. And so what Matt has decided to do now is, he's going to give them $5,106, I believe, is the $6.47 to, give an additional $5,000, his original $100, and the $6.47 they spent sending the money back to him. He's going to donate anonymously if he has to, because he doesn't think that the kids that are being helped by this organization should be punished, because the people running it are jerks.
And you know, Nick, I love this story. I love this story.
Right?
I do. I love this story because a lot of times people come up to me and say, well, look at all these religious institutions doing such good things for people. Look at all the charity they do. And what we have seen in this example, in this clear example, is that it's not about the charity. It's not about the kids. It's about the Baptists doing it in the name of the Baptists and not letting anybody else come in. They're hogging the charity here. They're saying, I want exclusivity in the charity. I'm not going to let other people, I'm not going to let the opposite people come in and help the kids. This is absurd. Can you imagine if Foundation Beyond Belief refused a donation from a church for their efforts to go through their efforts? Can you imagine that even happening in any of the charities that are, actually interested in helping people? It's right. Absurd. And it's insulting, and it's beautiful because it really shows how little they actually care about what they're doing and how much more they care about the image of what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line here. And, you know, Matt and Kelly Wilburn are just doing something really quite amazing, and it's really fantastic what they've done. You know, I should add that this is one of the reasons that when we do things like our national convention and we raise money to donate to a charity, it is important for us that the charity shows up and, you know, stands with us and takes the comically large sized check. Because we think it's important that people don't view atheist money as being somehow tainted. This has happened over and over again. I mean, there is a story, and I don't know how out there it is about someone in our movement trying to donate money to a cancer charity, and they didn't want his money.
Yeah.
And we're not talking thousands of dollars. We're talking tens of thousands. We're talking, I think it was $250,000.
Walk for the Cure, right? Walk for the Cure.
I remember which it was, but it was the American Cancer
Society. Coleman.
But they refused the money and said, nope, we're not doing that anymore. So this happens, and it's pretty ridiculous. But well, that's the time we've got. A lot going on this week, and thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the American Atheist Viewpoint. For more information about our work or to become a member, as always, please visit www.atheist.org. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.